Hi, this is A Way to Go, where we talk about death and dying and the choices we face. My name is Sean O'Connor. Thanks for being here. This podcast has been created by Dignity SA, a non-profit organization with a vision for South Africa, where all of us are supported through life's final journey with compassionate care, dignity, and the freedom to choose our own path. Dignity SA, our lives, our choices. This episode features a recording of a recent webinar titled Faith, African Spirituality and Dying Well, hosted by Dignity SA and moderated by Dignity SA Director Vuya Ilengu. It features Tabisile Setaba, Reverend Mohomotsi Diutluleng, and Siyabonga Mkize, whom Vuya will introduce in more detail in just a moment. We decided to break the webinar up into two parts. This is part one, where the focus is really on whether medical assistance in dying is compatible with African spirituality. It's quite an eye-opener, to be honest. I think you might be surprised at what you hear, so please stick around until the end. In our next episode, part two, Vuya and her panelists explore what a dignified death looks like from an African perspective and some of the barriers and challenges that are faced. But here we are with part one. Thanks for joining us. Here's Vuya.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Molweni, Dumelang, Khoyenant, Dima Digwane, Sanibonani, and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this evening for this webinar tonight. My name is Vuya Kabanyane Ilengo, and I'm one of the directors at Dignity South Africa. I'm honored to be moderating tonight's conversation called Faith, African Spirituality, and Dying Well. I know it's a mouthful, but we will unpack it gently as the night goes on. My hope is that at the end of the evening, something you might hear will shift your perspective, even if just a little bit. So just an intro to who we are, Dignity South Africa. We are a non-profit organization advocating for decriminalization of medically assisted dying in South Africa. We do not use the term euthanasia because it creates a lot of confusion, and it also carries a lot of negative connotation that we do not want to be associated with. Instead, you will hear us tonight talking about medically assisted dying. And just to be absolutely clear, medically assisted dying is not about suicide, and it is not the same as suicide. And nothing we're discussing tonight encourages anyone to harm themselves. Medically assisted dying refers to a process where a mentally competent person asks voluntarily and willingly for someone, a medical professional, to help them end their life. It is usually done under medical supervision by a willing healthcare professional. Now, in South Africa, medical assisted dying is treated as murder. And this means that no doctor can legally assist you, no matter how much you ask or how much pain you're in. Which is why on the 9th of April, this coming month, Dignity South Africa will be going to court in Pretoria to ask the court to decriminalize assisted dying in South Africa. And it's our hope that if we win this case, well, when we win this case, people will have more choices at the end of their lives. Yeah. Now that we know the lay of the land and everyone understands what term we're going to be using tonight, let's get on with our topic. This evening, we're going to be exploring medically assisted dying, and we're going to be looking at it from an African context, African spirituality, African religion, and how it affects us as African families. And we know that this is a very personal and a sensitive topic. So we're not going to treat this as a debate. It's a conversation that we're having. We're learning from each other. So let's be open. Let's hear what others think. And then we're just going to have a beautiful conversation tonight. Okay, so I have three amazing, beautiful humans that have agreed to join me tonight, and I'm so glad that they did. And I will ask them to introduce themselves. And when they introduce themselves, I want them to tell us what has most shaped the way they think about death or dying. So before we start, let me introduce them. I have Thabisile. Thabisile Sithaba is a CEO and a co-founder of a company called Sendoff. Hi, Thabisile. Thank you so much for joining us. I have Reverend Mogomotsi Diutluleng. Mfundisi is a minister at the Pretoria Central Methodist Church. Ngosi Mfundisi for joining us. And lastly but not least, I have Siyabonga Mkhize, who is an African spiritual advisor and a consultant. Siya, thank you for joining us. And before you all judge me and say, why am I not calling Siyabonga Gogo or Mkhulu? He did say that I mustn't call him Gogo or Mkhulu. So I will be referring to him as Siyabonga or Siya. Yes? Cool. Okay. So Thabisile, perhaps you can start us off, please, by telling us what has shaped the way you think about death or dying.
I think for me, this goes a bit way back to a time when I was 8 years old and I lost my mom. And in that, you know, I learned a lot of things about grief. Firstly, it's how people are just so afraid of talking about death and their perception about death as well. Some people view death as a transition. Some people view death as the end of it all. And there's just a lot of fears from the adults. I remember I was 8 years old, but there was just a lot of confusion, a lot of denial about what had taken place when I lost my mom. And also the conversation around supporting a child who's bereaved. Because at that point in time, there was my grandmother who's just lost a child. And everyone, as you know, in Black families and homes, they come, you know, the mourners come in during the week just to show support to the family. Now, what you realize is, number one, nobody sat me down as a child and said to me, your mom has passed. And after that moment, I actually found out that somebody whispered in my ear, but unfortunately for them, I was sleeping. I didn't catch it. So I only saw when people started to come in and, you know, when the conversations were going around and I was wondering why there's so many cars, why there's so many people coming into the house. So I think that for me was a turning point. At that time, I had little to no understanding. But looking back now as an adult, it's really about people's perception about death, the different ideologies that people have, and also refusing to talk about it.
For those who don't understand, can you explain what the whispering was all about?
So I think Siyabonga will also go more into it. So there's a cultural belief within the Black communities that for a child, you can't tell them that somebody has passed, especially when it's a parent. What you need to do is to wait for them to sleep and then you whisper in their ear. And that's how they will understand, or that's how you announce the news. So there is no structured form or, you know, a let's sit down and help you understand that you've lost a parent and they're not coming back. Or, you know, helping us to really understand at such a young age that, look, a death has occurred.
Thank you for sharing that. Fundisi, would you share your story, please?
Well, firstly, just to appreciate the invitation and greetings to everyone that is joining us tonight. So my conception about death was informed, firstly, as a Black African child, having brought up in a context where in our culture and social orientation, the subject of death remains shrouded in mystery, and it's almost like a taboo to talk about it, because it's almost like when you speak about it, you are actually invoking the spirit of death and all that. More like in Setswana, as we would say, wathola, wathola skabuaka kaliso, you know. Don't talk about death because just now you are invoking it. And so I grew up, and I think it was deeply embedded in my subconscious that you don't talk about death because then you call it upon your family and all that, and it is a dark, bad thing. We should fear, you know, the point. My first encounter with death actually was in 1983. I still remember. I was only 10 years old when my grandmother passed away. And we were at home. And when the hearse came, I only know now that that was the hearse. We were taken right at the back of the house so that we don't want to see this black car. It was called Black Mariah back then. I don't know why. Don't know what that means. Don't ask me. But it was called Black Mariah. So we were put at the back of the house, and I guess the corpse was then taken out. That is my background about it. But then as I grew as an adult, but also growing in the things of faith and growing in spirituality, I had a radically changed view of what death is, to a point where I actually find it very difficult, at least in my mind, to separate life from death. Because indeed, even in the Christian faith, our declaration is that even as we are in life, we are in death. And therefore, death and life is the two sides of the same coin. And I've grown to understand that death is part of life and life is just part of death, and it is a perpetual circle with no end. And that's where I am with regard to death right now.
And Sia, if you can share your story, please.
So good evening to everybody, and thank you for Dignity SA for the work that they do, because to shed light, I think it's very important work as well, considering that I think the most two things are guaranteed in life: death and taxes. And everybody's taught taxes, but no one has ever prepared for death. And I think that death is a very interesting concept, in that especially in South Africa, it's almost un-African to explore the concept of death, especially when you look at what's happening on TV. Whereas I've seen many a TV program, because I've got two kids as well, that normalize the conversation of ancestry and death and moving on to the afterlife and coming back in a different shape or form. But to keep it very brief, my first real memory that shaped my perception of death or understanding of death was when my grandmother passed away, because my mother had us when she was 18 and my father had to work and my mother had to go to university. So we were all raised by my grandmother. And when she passed away, she was very old, and had she not broken her hip and had a hip replacement, maybe one could postulate that she probably would still be alive right now. But when she did get to the point where it was very visible for us, that would, you know, she's in too much pain and there's nothing that the doctors can do, and that there's not enough painkillers in the world to subdue her pain. When she passed away, how it was explained to me was not that, because I got the explanation in Zulu, and I said that ugogo akasekho emhlabeni, but uzombona ngamaphupho, which translates to your grandmother is no longer here in this realm, and you will now see her in your dreams, and she will travel with you all the time and everywhere. And this time, you will no longer have to come down to KZN from Joburg to see her, but she will be with you all the time. And I think that helped me with the grieving process, and it shaped my understanding that death is just a transition from one realm to the other, and that you return later on in the years, if God decides to give you the right to return, you return later on in a different shape or a different form. And sometimes you return in a different body where the gender was different to the one that you were alive in, right? And I think that is the beauty, to understand that everything is a cycle, that there is no beginning and an end, but rather there is a cycle, and that we are never truly alone, that when someone passes away, We don't have to now travel to see them, but we can see them every single time we go to bed in our dreams.
Thank you so much for those reflections. And already we're starting to see that even though there is religion and then there is African spirituality, there is a bit of where everything comes together, there's a thread, because we all believe that at the end of it all, we're still going to see our loved ones. And what is coming out for me out of the introductions that you've made is the sadness of the fact that there's so much secrecy around death, that we do not talk about it in our culture, that we put it in a corner and we wait for it to happen before we actually talk to our kids or our families about it. But if we then just going to start our first question, and it's the crux of why we're here today. And that question is, medically assisted dying is often perceived as un-African or anti-religion or anti-religion, or whichever way you want to look at it, un-African or anti-religion. And I just want to understand where that perception comes from, because when I've spoken to Usia Nomfundis, there is a traditional act that used to happen long time ago when someone wanted to die and they couldn't die. So, Sia, maybe if you can then start us off to explain to us that, why is it often perceived as if it's un-African?
So we need to understand that the ideal scenario for someone to pass away would be natural causes when they are a senior citizen, 70, 80, 90 plus years old. They would go to bed one day and then they would simply not wake up. To pass away in your sleep, it indicates that you have led your life well, right? But it also is an indication of certain degree of spiritual purity in the way in which you pass away, okay? The issue here is that we struggle to separate suicide as well as ukela, or to ask idlozi, or for the ancestors to take someone's life. Because the very act of passing away without normal circumstances, or in other words, somebody who passes away of non-natural causes at an old age, their passing away is always spiritually investigated. Okay? If someone passes away by violent or traumatic death, a car accident, a shooting, or a stabbing, right, or a heart attack at a very young age, or poisoning, it is spiritually investigated, and in fact, that person is typically cleansed prior to their body being allowed to exit the hearse and enter the threshold, passing the threshold and entering the yard. So that is how seriously African culture takes non-natural causes of death to a particular person, that they would cleanse the person. And if the person passed away where they were 32 years old, fit, healthy, and strong, and there was a stroke, it would be spiritually investigated. Now, unfortunately, what happened is that there are certain culture, or African culture rather, is based on certain assumptions. It was based on the assumption that everyone passes away by a natural death. And those that don't pass away by natural death, chances are it was because of they were at war fighting, or it was some sort of poisoning, which they would be cleansed. Historically speaking, there was no protocol, right? It only was a while where we developed a protocol to say, okay, fine. What happens when umuntu is clearly too old and too sickly, but is not being allowed to pass from this realm to the next? It was then where everything edlozin with ancestors is a request. We say, on behalf of this individual, we ask, can he be allowed to pass from this realm and enter into the next? And the reason that protocol was there in the first place is because we understand ukuthi lo muntu will come back. This individual will return. That's what in Zulu we call ukuzalwa kwembethe. Ukuzalwa kwembethe simply means you are a reincarnation, right, of a particular person who lived many years ago. So much so that sometimes you actually embody their physical and mental disabilities that they had when they were alive. Okay? So when we talk about why it is perceived as un-African, it is because we don't have a knowledge of what African culture actually is. A lot of people don't even understand the origins of their praise names. They don't understand ukuthi what should happen when someone passes away by natural death. So they don't know ukuthi cha, with colonialism and apartheid, there was a loss of passing down that indigenous knowledge and wisdom to say ukuthi cha, this is what happens when someone passes away by traumatic death. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when someone passes away by a natural death. This is what happened when someone passes away by a natural death and they drew their last breath outside of the home. And this is what we do for someone that commits suicide. And this is what we do for someone that would like to be assisted with passing from this realm to the next. Because in Zulu, or in African culture, you don't say umuntu ufile noma ushonile or someone died. You say umuntu akasekho emhlabeni. They are no longer with us in this realm. So technically speaking, with even in the language, someone doesn't die. A cow can die, and a cat can die, and a dog can die. Tina, we don't die. We pass from one realm to the next because it is the belief that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It is simply transferred from one party to from one place to another. Hence, when we pass away, we don't cremate. We bring you back to the soil, and we give that energy back to Mother Nature.
Mm. So quickly, in terms of when you were talking about ukucelelwa, what was that all about?
Every culture has a variety of ways. We can spend 2 hours talking on the different ways of ukucelelwa.
Which we don't
right?
have.
Which we don't have.
Yes.
Essentially, it is a request where the elder of the family goes to Emsamo or the place where they would communicate with their ancestors, and they ask that this particular's life person's life be allowed to leave their body so that they can pass from this realm onto the next. It was a request. Sometimes it is at the request of the individual who was struggling and in pain. Mm-hmm. Other times it is at the family, as a family, as a collective, we can see that no, gogo or umkhulu or auntie is in pain. How can we best help her? Sometimes the person is in a coma and they're brain dead and it's machines, okay? In that instance, the family can say, we feel that it is in the best interest of the individual that we ask Idlozi to take them, you see? Mm-hmm. So that is what would happen. Sometimes they would slaughter a goat and they take a piece of raw liver and let them eat it, right? Other people would break off a small piece of banana and they would let the person eat a banana. Sometimes ugogo would say, "Ngicela nginginikeze ubanana, give me a piece of fruit." Then they would know what I know. Gogo's ready to go. Or other times, right, they would actually allow the elder person to lie in the isbay or the kraal, and then the cows would be allowed to trample their body. I think it was one of the ways in which, for illustrative purposes, of course, Ishaga Ilembe did that, where I think it was Udingiswayo, where they trampled his body with the cattle. That was one way in which the person was allowed to pass from this realm to the next. There are many ways. There are different cultures do a variety of things. I'm just giving you one or two examples.
Yeah. Mfundisi, you also mentioned that in the Tswana tradition, that's exactly what used to happen, that a person would be put in the kraal and then the cows would come in and then trample them.
And to show that this isn't like a Zulu thing, Tswana thing, Bedi thing.
Yes.
The Zulu cultures are Nguni and non-Nguni, but they shared the same kind of practice when it comes to assisting someone to pass away.
Mm. Because I think for me that just shows that people realize that there was suffering and that whole suffering needed to then be brought to an end. So that is why then they would go and ask the ancestors to now welcome the person back into the ancestral village, wherever the ancestors are. So, Fundisi, I was just asking you, you mentioned that also in the Tswana tradition that you have that. If you can touch on that, but also while you're talking about that, if you can just also talk about that suffering from a theological point of view, how do you grapple with that? Because there's always the scriptures that we get told that it's only God who has a right to give life and take life away. So how does then life, death, and the suffering in between life and death work all in the theological sense?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you indeed, Sizibuya. Indeed, let me just say, and Siyabonga has touched this on this, and I'm not going to belabor the point, that indeed in African culture, including in Setswana, the assisted dying would happen through the kettle and the coal process, which is a painful process if you think about it, unlike a medically assisted dying, which comes the issue of comfort, the issue of dignity, and all. So we come from there, and we're at a place where, thank God for the intelligence and the wisdom and the evolution of science, we are able to, if a person chooses, give them a dignified passing through process. Anyway, I want to underscore this fact. Theologically speaking, life is sacred and it should be respected. And life comes from God and continues through this realm into the next realm to God, and it's a perpetual, non-ending thing. Secondly, life is here on earth is meant to be lived for a purpose. It's meant for a purpose. And as part of that, the third thing is that there should be quality. Quality to the life you are experiencing or are going through. So yes, life is sacred. Life is it's meant for a purpose, and life is to be respected, and it should then be allowed to continue as far as possible. Having said that, suffering is not God's will. Suffering is not, that doesn't tell us about, doesn't represent who God is. God did not create us to suffer. However, we are in a situation where in this life we go through suffering, and nobody enjoys suffering. Nobody enjoys suffering. If you think about it, and I'm going to use biblical references because I think that's my role here, to bring the biblical and theological perspective here. Biblically speaking, we have a reference where Jesus was about to die. And Jesus was located within a garden called Gethsemane. And in that garden, Jesus goes forward with three of his disciples and goes a little bit further than them. And there Jesus prays. Jesus has always been talking about death. Right from the beginning, he has never hidden the fact that he is going to die. Jesus had never, not even once, given an impression that he's afraid of death. He has always confided in his disciples, in fact, prepared them, counseled them, and reassured them that, look, part of my process of life and purpose here on earth is the fact that I am going to die. He was very open about it. But in the Garden of Gethsemane, we find Jesus Christ, who is the Lord and the headship of our faith, struggling in deep anguish, not about death, no, but in this regard, Jesus in Gethsemane was struggling and asking and praying God to let the cup of suffering bypass him. So in his prayer, he says, Lord, if it is your will, let this cup pass by. And the cup he was talking about is the cup of suffering. Jesus never asked that, Lord, I don't want to die. Can I just go into heaven without going through the channel or the tunnel of death? But what he prayed against was the issue of suffering. And for me, as a theologian, right there, and a faith person, is that even the master of our faith never condoned suffering. And unfortunately for him, part of his life process was that he would exit in a very brutal way, that as he did. And he wasn't the first one, by the way. We have prophets like Jeremiah, who died violently in Egypt. After Jesus, you've got his disciples like Stephen, Peter, John. Some of them were beheaded and all that. It was a pain. Nobody, none of these disciples in the Bible embraced the whole process of dying through suffering. They embraced death, but not suffering. And I want to stop for now.
Yeah, that is such an interesting point that you make, Fordyce, that even Jesus, our Lord, was willing to die, but he understood that he doesn't have to suffer through that. And I think that is what, as Dignity South Africa, we're trying to help people understand that, yes, we understand that we're all going to die, but once you lose your dignity and also you are in unbearable pain, why should anyone have to go through that and be told that they have to wait for death?
In fact, can I push an envelope a little bit here and say, the process of the Dignity South Africa that is doing, in my interpretation, it is actually literally this organization there in Gethsemane, in the Garden of Gethsemane with Jesus, saying, we are ready to die and we have embraced death, but can we not suffer? Can unnecessarily? If there is another way, let explore. That is basically what Jesus' prayer there was saying, to say, if there is another way, let's explore that alternative. And that is what I'm hearing Dignity South Africa saying.
Spot on. You are so spot on. That's exactly what we say. Now, Tapsila, I need to bring you in so that you can maybe talk to us about the lived-in experiences of the families that you deal with every day. So when you deal with them, because I know that sometimes you meet them before and sometimes you meet them after the loved ones have passed on. When you're talking to them and they're telling you their stories, what is the main crux of their issue, the suffering? Is it the pain? Is it the suffering? Is it the dilemma that they were caught in between the religion and the traditional? What conversations do you have with them at this moment?
You know, we are dealing with the different families that are bereaved. One of the conversations that you pick up is that death or engaging in death conversations give you a lot of clarity about the kind of life that you're living, about the kind of husband that you are, about the kind of wife that you are, and really living life fully, ensuring that if tomorrow you don't wake up, because that's where I think the fear of people come from. People think that we have a lot of time. And I think, you know, Bishop Mohumutu would agree with me here, where the Bible says, always remember that your days are numbered. I don't think people wake up in the morning realizing that their days are numbered. Hence, they're not living with so much intent. That is where you hear that when a loved one is passed on, the first thing that most families say is that we did not know that we did not have enough time, which we knew earlier. So the basis of contention is be intentional about how you live. Because what I do realize is that, especially, you know, working with some death doulas, of course, within our network, where someone would be in active transitioning and then they are called in to assist, you know, that person who's going through the transition and the loved ones. One of the most argued conversation around that is, I did not know, I did not have enough time. I wish I lived better. I wish I loved more. I wish I was intentional. And for the families as well, their biggest fear is that selfishness of, we don't want to let you go because there are more things that we had anticipated to do. But between all of us that are here today, what is stopping you? What is stopping you from doing those things today? Yeah. And I can safely tell you that it's because you think you have more time.
Mm-hmm.
And people get a rude awakening when their loved ones get diagnosed with a terminal illness. And now remember that these family members are not as healthy. They cannot do the activities that you wanted to do with them when they were young, they were healthy, and now you have to deal with this terminal illness and the pain that they go through. And one of the interesting finds is that the people that are actually going through transitioning, they want to transition.
Yeah.
They want to transition. I remember having a conversation with a gentleman who's also a popular radio DJ. He had COVID during, you know, 2021. And unfortunately, him and his sister both had COVID and the sister transitioned. But the interesting part when he narrates the story to me is that he says, I saw what the afterlife looked like. And me and my sister were actually walking into the afterlife together. And she decided that this is too glorious for me. It's too precious. I don't want to go back to Earth. I really don't want to go back there. During my existence on Earth, I'm sick. I'm in tubes. I'm in oxygen machines. Here in the afterlife, I'm healed. I'm you know, the younger, beautiful version of myself. And this guy says that with him, he also loved the afterlife. He did not want to come back. The only thing that brought him back was the picture of her, of his 4-year-old, and he thought, no, my daughter needs more time with me.
Yeah.
You know, so I would want to put in the fight so that I can be able to get back to health. But I think the biggest thing around families, and which I want every one of us today to go home with, is be intentional about how you're living your life. Tomorrow you may not wake up. Then what happens tomorrow? What story is your family telling? Mm-hmm. And if it so happens that you are diagnosed with a terminal illness, you know, have you done everything that you feel you needed to do? So that at that time, when that time comes, your family doesn't feel like you still had more to explore. And a friend of mine, you know, always says this profound quote that we are all walking each other home in this journey of life.
Mm.
And families need to be willing to accept death conversation in as much as they're uncomfortable, in as much as they bring fear. But they need to open up the room and be a safe space, because if I cannot tell my family, who else can I tell?
That is so true. And you know what the conversations that we've just had now between Usia and Umfundisi and you, Tapsile, is that it just shows me that death is unfortunately something that has been taken away from us as communities, and it has now become a medical problem. Because in the olden days, we used to look after our own people dying. It used to be a community participation. People would look after you, and there would be death doulas way back in time that would actually make sure that someone transitioned properly.
And we're going to leave it there. Remember to visit dignitysouthafrica.org, where you can register as a member for free. To track our court application, which was submitted on the 9th of April 2026, and to download a bunch of other useful documents and other materials. Until next time, if there is one, please spread the word that talking about death is good for life. Adios.